Okay, good morning everyone and welcome to today's Police and Fire and Rescue Service Board meeting. Welcome to Andy Anderson, who has replaced Dean Mack. Welcome to the board, Andy. And also Jim McNeil, Deputy Chief Fire Officer, Deputy Chief Assistant. Welcome, Jim. And also Jocelyn, who's going to give a presentation. Thanks, Jocelyn. Any apologies?
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, apologies from Councillor Parry.
Thanks. Order of business? Just as per agenda. Okay. And that takes us on to the minutes. Any matters arising from the minutes? Thank you. Just one area I was looking for an update. I think, Steve, you're going to come to that anyway. So just on the Dalkeith fire station, I'll let you come to that. Are you happy to endorse the minutes? Okay. Take us to public reports, fire and rescue service.
Thank you, Chair. Morning, everybody. As we just heard, the brief introductions to my right, Jim McNeill's our Deputy Assistant Chief covering the east of Scotland and Group Commander. We have now changed our role identification from Group Managers and Area Managers to Group Commander and Area Commander. So from henceforth, that's what we will be called for minutes, etc. I've also got, like to welcome, just sitting behind me, a new vital part of our community action team in Midlothian, Lynn Bruce, who's joined us from a fairly lengthy career in our control room, so has a first-hand practical knowledge of many aspects of the fire and rescue service, and I'm sure as the sort of weeks and months go on, we will hear an awful lot more about some of the work that Lynn's getting involved in, and that I can sort of see some of those benefits already, and particularly in the Midlothian area. Just before I go on, there's a couple of areas that I'm just going to update the committee on. We are still in the fairly lengthy negotiations around our change in role map and our pay and associated conditions. The biggest part in all of what we're doing just now is the change in the role map, and I suppose it's just to remind the board, there's three main areas that we're looking from a firefighter perspective, and that's the out-of-hospital cardiac arrest response, a co-response role with the ambulance service, a dedicated specialist response for a marauding terrorist attack, and also a safe and well concept and all of the areas that may bring in terms of what we can do for the sort of more vulnerable people within our communities. We are at a fairly critical stage, but I'm sure I think I've mentioned that for the last few months and few meetings. Hopefully, we may get to a stage in the very near future that a ballot might come out to the membership in Scotland, and we can get this settled and move on and get on with some of the work that we have reported at this board before. Really pleasing during the bonfire period that the work that had gone on in the run-up to that in Midlothian, and also on the night of the 5th, the support from our colleagues across the room, particularly at Dalkeith and the surrounding area. And for the first time that I can remember, we had no reported attacks on firefighters in the east of Scotland. You know, so not just locally, but across the east of Scotland on that night. And for me, something's obviously got to be working. And it's certainly not just our work, it's the work that we do alongside our colleagues across and also from the local authority. If we take away all the sofas and rubbish that tend to get thrown bonfires, then we're going to have less fires that are out of control that we need to intervene, and then young people on occasion can get a little bit annoyed that we are spoiling their fun, and that's where generally there's usually some issues and quite often involving our police colleagues. We haven't seen that this year. So for me, that's got to be seen as a huge positive. Slightly different note, I did report last time we were doing some assessment around some concrete roof panels at Dalkeith Fire Station. We have had some sort of fairly immediate remedial work done, which has brought the station back to a relatively business as usual status. What a medium long term solution might look like is still being examined. So obviously options around repair or replace still have to be bottomed out in terms of finance, in terms of potential collaboration with other partners. But safe to say, any of those options that maybe can get considered, there would be a communication through this board and also with local authority and other important partners as and when the time is right. But just now, we're assessing what those options look like. And that is me, unless there's any immediate questions.
Questions or comments? Just on the bonfire night, and that's really encouraging news, no attacks on any firefighters in East of Scotland. Obviously made reference to the agency work, so the waste amnesty, uplifting of sofas, etc., which has obviously played a part. Is there any key significant area you think that's really contributed towards that?
I think, generally speaking, the work, the preparation work, that, as I say, the multi-agency stuff done in advance, and maybe a little bit of triage on the night. You know, it's bonfire night. There's an acceptance in the across the UK that we are going to see bonfires. I think, Lynn will probably know far more about this than I would, having worked for a long time in our control room. A little bit of triage at the control room, if the fire is under adult supervision and it's not likely to spread anywhere that's going to cause any damage. Now, I know there's some variation in that. If we just leave that as a bonfire and we have no attendance, then the fires will generally just go out themselves eventually, and it doesn't require us to come in, and it doesn't require any support from the police. I'm not saying that was across the east, because there would have been some points where there might have been some tensions, but certainly that is one of the areas that can make a difference on the night. But the stuff that run in the run up to that is probably the important bit. And if there are organised events, particularly with fireworks involved, then everyone is far safer and we're less likely to see accident and injury over that period. And, you know, I think I said here before, personal opinion, the legislation that we could bring forward, albeit UK legislation, to further control and license the sale of fireworks would certainly make my life an awful lot easier, and I'm fairly certain our colleagues in the police an awful lot easier as well, particularly for that period of year.
Thanks very much, Steve. And Lynn, welcome to today's meeting. Any other comments or questions? Get scrutiny report. Thanks.
Hey, good morning, Chair. Good morning, members. This is my first scrutiny report, and I'll try and pitch the information in the report at quite a high level as I go through that, and happy to take any more detailed questions in conjunction with Steve Gourlay afterwards. The report itself, if we skim forward to page 10 on the documentation for the meeting, there's a performance summary at the top of that page which gives a high-level overview of the year-to-date figures and performance. In scanning that, obviously, you get the colour indication with the coding, the RAG status, as we call it, the red, amber, green. Slight increase of plus 10 from the same period last year, year-to-date, of up to 31 for accidental dwelling fires. Moving down through that, the other one that pings with the red diamond is the special service casualties, which is up from 19 to 24 for the year-to-date figures compared to last year. And we'll go into that in a bit more detail as we go through the pieces of the report. Scanning to the bottom of that, page 10, you can see the kind of overall performance over a five-year trend, and you get an indication of our four main themes of all incident types, where you see the overall bar chart there. The red line is the false alarms, which again just almost constant, but a slight increase. The fires, again, you can see the wee spike in 2017-18, and then it's levelled off and reduced and then levelled off. And special services, fairly consistent on that trend line. Moving forward through to page 13 of the papers, and we've got a reduction of all accidental dwelling fires. And the main results that I'd like to focus in on there is during this quarter, we responded to 14 accidental dwelling fires, which was an increase of 5 from the same period last year. However, it's good to note that the long-term trend line is consistent and in line with the Scottish and East Service Delivery Area performance. Main reasons are 14 accidental dwelling fires attended, with 57% of those accountable within single occupancy households. The main cause of these fires being attributed to cooking at 35%, and various other causes and reasons, as you see below that. Again, that performance data allows us to focus in our actions and our prevention and protection activities on those causes and single occupancy households and causes of fire being related to cooking and in the kitchen. Sticking with the reasons there for a second, of those 14 fires, it's important to note that those were all confined to the room of where the fire started, which is a whole range of reasons. Our prevention and protection messages, teaching people to shut doors, be safer in their homes, and also our home fire safety check programme allows people to be more educated and safer in their homes. Also combined with our response rates allows us to get to fires as quickly as we can and contain them to the room of origin. Less damage, less costs incurred. At the bottom of that reasons text, there's only 9 of those properties had smoke detectors fitted, 4 of which did not operate. So again, it's another part of our community safety visit and programme where we educate people on checking their smoke detectors and making sure that they're working and tested weekly, and also that our fire safety visit programme fits free smoke detectors as well. That takes me nicely down into the actions where during this reporting period, slight corruption in the data there, but that's picked up in the appendix of the report, so apologies for that. So during this reporting period, there was 224 home fire safety visits carried out in Midlothian, and that's across a range of different initiatives that supplement that as well. Moving on to page 15 of the report, this is reduction of all fire casualties, fatal and non-fatal, including precautionary checkups. So moving to the results of that part of the report, and in this reporting period, the Scottish Fire and Rescue Service report no fire casualties, and this is a reduction of 6 casualties over the same reporting period last year. And if I can just draw your attention to, albeit the data in the table at the bottom suggests 2, remember that's the year-to-date figures, and it was quarter one that incurred the 2 casualties. The long-term trend line, sticking with the results, the long-term trend line based upon the 10,000 casualties per 10,000 population shows that we're currently below the Scottish and East Service Delivery Area average. Once again, in the actions section of this part of the report, it's 224 home fire safety visits carried out. We continue to work on our home fire safety visit programme and other prevention and protection activities with our partners in the council, NHS and various other partners to reduce instances of fire, which will reduce our all fire casualties data moving forward. The next part of the report I'd like to focus on is on page 17 of your report, and it's reduction of all deliberate fires, excluding dwelling fires. On the results section of this, there were 69 deliberate fires within the reporting period, which is a slight reduction of 8 compared to the same period last year. Now, as we know, there was quite a high level and increase of deliberate fire setting within Midlothian since about early 2018. As you see on the trend line near the bottom of the page, that spike for 2017-18 is reduced and it's stabilised over the coming years. And that decline is welcome and positive to see for us, and there's been a lot of proactive prevention activities engaged between the fire service and other partners to achieve that work. However, we don't rest on our laurels with that. There's a lot of work to do with still 69 deliberate fires over the reporting period. The main reasons for those deliberate fires, nearly 82%, were attributable to deliberate secondary fires, which is what the fire service categorises as fires that are sort of in the open, they're of a secondary nature, they don't affect primary fires, primary properties and things that would have an insurance value. 46% were in wasteland and scrubland, wood and or crops, so outdoors basically, and 22% involved refuse bins or wheelie bins. And again, that's an area that we will continue to focus on because it has incurred cost to the local authority. 5% for vehicle fires and 5% for deliberate building fires. The actions part of the report, again, just confirms, is a small summary for what's expanded upon in Appendix 1 of the report, just saying that we're working, engaged with our partners, all the work that Lynn's doing behind us, and our local area liaison officers engaging with our partners to target and reduce deliberate fires within our areas. The next part of the report on page 19 of your paperwork is reduction of special service road traffic collisions. Again, the overriding statement for us here is the Scottish Fire and Rescue Service only attends road traffic collisions they are requested to attend, normally where there's people trapped or medically injured in the incident. And obviously our partners across the room in the police and Scottish Ambulance Service attend many more incidents and deal with them without the attendance of the Fire and Rescue Service. So in that respect, please be mindful that the results do not paint the wider picture of road traffic collisions collectively. We attended 11 road traffic collisions during this period, and this represents a slight increase of 1 from the same reporting period last year. Midlothian itself, as you'll see for the trend lines underneath near the bottom of the page, is currently above the Scottish and East Service Livery Area trend for road traffic collisions. The actions that were taken to, again, work with our partners in the police and other partners across the local authority with various programmes like Tomorrow's Driver programme specifically target young people and is one of our attempts to reduce casualties and road traffic collisions. The next page of the report, page 21 of your paperwork, is reduction of special service casualties, and we attended a total of 50 special service incidents in quarter two. There were no fatal and 18 non-fatal casualties. Again, that slightly comes into conflict with what you see at the bottom of your page there on the table, bearing in mind those again are the year-to-date figures. So 0 fatal and 18 non-fatal casualties. This is an increase of 9 compared to the same period last year, and per 10,000 head of population, Midlothian is above the East, the Scottish and East Service Livery Area trend, as you see near the bottom of the page. Road traffic collisions accounted for all but one of the 18 non-fatal casualties, and the other incident was a special service rescue of a different nature. Scottish Fire and Rescue Service in Midlothian continue to work in partnership with the Mid Lothian Rapid Response Team to care for people. Obviously, another part of this work, which would normally focus in on our casualty numbers here, would be assisting our partner agencies with other special service incidents, i.e. forcing entry where there's concern for an occupant. So this part of the text just simply says that, in general, we would normally work in partnership with other agencies, for example, Mid Lothian Rapid Response Team, to care for people who fall in their own home. And moving on to the next part of the report on page 23, reduction of false alarm, unwanted fire alarm signals. And Scottish Fire and Rescue Service attended 103 unwanted fire alarm signals during this reporting period, which is a slight increase of 13 from the same period last year. We're currently below that of the Scotland and East Service Delivery Area trend line, as shown below. The main reasons: 50% of unwanted fire alarm signals attendances were caused by equipment failure within the fire alarm system itself, and other main causes included activation by contaminants and dust at 15%, cooking and burnt toast again at 15%, and fire alarm testing at 10%. We continue to work with our partners to reduce unwanted fire alarm signals, and our fire safety enforcement officers work closely with various premises during the incident and post-incident to continue to work on reducing inconvenience and costs and safety related to unwanted fire alarm signals. Quickly take you through some of the, that's the main part of the report complete. I'll quickly take you through some key points in the appendix, which focuses in on our prevention and protection activities. The headline on the front page, if we look at the figures, our target, we're well below our target, and the text confirms that we've had a changeover in some of our fire safety enforcement staff within the area, and while there's training and various other bits and pieces going on for that individual, there's a range of slippage happened in there, and we hope to achieve and pick up some of that slack in due course. Taking you on to page 27 of the paperwork, the total visits delivered, and again there's a breakdown by ward area in that table, totals 224. Moving on to page 28, and the section that I'd like to, there's various sections with good information in there, but the section that I would just like to take you to in terms of high level is our referrals section, which is the third part in that page, with various relationships and external partners assisting us with our home fire safety visit programme, and that's where other agencies work in partnership and refer us through their engagement with the community. The British Red Cross have referred 15, Mid Lothian Contact Team 3, Mid Lothian Council Reablement is 3, and NHS 2. And we expect those figures to grow as we engage and educate our partners in what we can do to help make the community safer. And overall, 151 self-referrals to our Community Safety Engagement Toolkit system, which totals our 224 home fire safety visit checks during this quarter. Just below that, our community safety engagement. So again, various activities across the local area with school talks on the lead up to bonfire night. Again, helping to reduce our antisocial behaviour with talks to schools, leaflet drops and open days. A total of 27 events in the area. Moving on to page 29, nearly there, and work completed or in progress. So again, as you can see from that list, there's various, the third bullet point, we've facilitated home fire safety visit referral training at the Police Concern Hub for J Division. Again, that's part of the work I was just speaking about, to educate our partners on what we can do to help vulnerable people in the community that you are coming in contact with as one of our partners, and helping to reduce the risk in the community for us all. The fifth bullet point, our staff have delivered fire safety talks to new outreach workers in Dalkeith and Woodburn. And the local area liaison officer on the next bullet point delivered partnership referral training to community nurses in Midlothian Community Hospital. Again, a vital link to our vulnerable people in the community. That concludes my report and happy to pass any questions.
Thank you very much, Andy. Just one question from me of the on the accidental dwelling fires. Nine homes had smoke detectors, four of which didn't work. What were the reasons for them not working? Would we know that? Were the batteries removed? Or?
We don't record that level of detail in our reporting system. There's a potential batteries have been taken out or they've just been defective. One thing I would say, though, is we wouldn't walk away from those houses without fitting a single-point battery smoke alarm, which we do pretty routinely, so that whatever's happened, and it might be classed as a near miss, but they've still had a fire of some description, but with no casualties. There's a positive there, but for me, the fact that we've left the house with what we call a post-domestic incident response, so they've fitted an alarm before they've left and given some advice in the hope that that's the last time we go back to that house.
Thank you very much. Any comments or questions? Yep, Councillor McCall.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, thanks, Andy, and welcome to the board. On page 13, again, the same paragraph that the Chair was looking at, 57% were in single occupancy households. That seems to have come down. I thought the accidental fires had been a much higher single occupancy households, or am I just dreaming that? Is there a reason that we think that that's come down a bit?
It has come down, and similarly last week when I delivered a similar report in East Lothian, it actually was a marked difference in the households. The numbers are very low, so any slight changes to the sort of occupancy age will have quite a significant impact on those, and that's so there's no real way to say one way or the other. Unfortunately, in terms of our fatal fires, the risk criteria age is still a significant part of that, but it's only one part of it, and it's when you add in other risk factors, which then are the areas that we need to do more work with partners to identify. So age is very important, but it's one of many of those factors that will influence not just the event happening, but the outcome for the individuals involved. Does that answer your question? Okay.
Thanks. Just on the home fire safety visits, I do have to say I like the mechanism which used to award the points to like the most vulnerable households over 65 and the scoring that's done in that way, and I think that is borne out in the statistics as well. Yep, Councillor Muirhead.
Thanks. See, when you're focusing in on your home fire safety visits, are you proactive in that rather than being invited in? The reason I'm asking is I noticed in quite a lot of the reports, Midlothian East, for example, features, you know, it's got kind of, there's negatives in some of the reports here, you know, some things are increasing, and there seems to be a consistency in most of the reports. And then I look at your visits, and there's been a significant increase in the visits in that area. Is that in response to the, you know, to the concerns about, you know, that maybe being problematic for some reason in that particular area?
Anytime there's an incident, the post-domestic incident response kicks in, so that's not necessarily just that household that's involved. So if it was a block of four, we would do at least those ones and the ones either side, so you would then see where we've had incidents, and we know it's the sort of areas that we would quite often go to. That's when there's an opportunity to knock on someone's door, and because there's been an incident, we're more likely to get over the threshold, because if we just turn up out the blue, which we have done, and it's successful, but it's not as successful. So the link to the post-domestic incident response is probably the biggest link to the sort of change in the statistics that you're recognising.
because we need to put our resources wherever they're needed, and if there's been a fire, there's maybe likely to be other ones in the area because of the sort of housing stock, whole range of factors, but that's how we go about our business as best we can.
Thanks for that, Steve. Councillor Smale.
Yes, following on from that, there does appear to be a high incidence of road traffic-related tendencies in East, which leads to the usual question of whether the A68 is involved here, and it's also the case for special service casualties.
In terms of the direct geographical spread of road traffic collisions, generally not an area that I would want to put any of my expertise in yet. The A68 will have a number of casualties in it and RTCs. However, it's not generally a good measure from our perspective. A lot of the incidents we go to will be slightly higher speed. Hence, as Andy said, those are the ones we may have to cut people from or remove parts of the vehicle when they're medically trapped. So that might influence some of our statistics, but it's possibly from a more general road traffic collision and the actual road network. I don't like passing stuff to my colleagues, but it might be a question best answered by Aaron and the police.
On a different tack, we've been talking a lot about preventive measures for private buildings. In the past, this committee has moved to think a little bit more about vulnerable public buildings. For example, we were very conscious of the Paradise School being burnt down when it was empty. We worried about the Roslyn Lee Hospital. But sitting here right in our doorstep is the question of Jarnac Court, which is largely disused and is currently under refurbishment at a time which I believe is associated with much higher fire risk. I just wondered, especially as the chairman's involved with that project, have you a particular relationship with our colleagues who are involved with Jarnac Court, and can we be sure that during the refurbishment the risk of an arson attack or indeed an electrical fuse is being mitigated as far as possible?
Don't know the exact status of the refurbishment and whether the building is occupied or not, which would then determine whether it still sits under our legislation or health and safety construction legislation. So there's a bit of a grey area there. More than happy that where required, our enforcement team are involved along with building standards and building control within the local authority, who would normally have primacy over these sorts of matters. But absolutely, we've seen a number of areas of construction, just now at least, south of the border, where the legislation is different. I would like for projects like that to think that they have been through some form of consultation with ourselves, where there is any immediate structural changes to the building. But that doesn't sit directly with us from a legislative point of view, but more than happy to provide advice and comment on it if required, so we can do that.
Yeah, the issue is the refurbishment is taking quite a bit longer than we expected.
Yeah, just to put in the picture, Jarnac Court Council approved a paper last year that it would be used for temporary homeless accommodation. There has been some structural issues with the building, the external of the building, and Council is expecting a report back in December where we'll take that into consideration. But certainly I'll feed those comments back to our head housing as well. Okay.
Yeah. Chair, just to come back to you on that, as soon as you've mentioned the words temporary accommodation, and if it is sleeping accommodation, that changes the risk significantly. Totally accept that there is a risk to the building if it's empty. There still should be some assessment of risk to reduce that, but certainly when it becomes an occupied building with sleeping accommodation, that puts it to the much higher level of risk from our perspective, from a sort of people-centred risk approach. So that would be something that we would be involved in most likely, and any fire safety measures in place should be at the sort of highest standard for that.
Yeah, I'm sure it will be, but certainly we'll take that up with housing as well, and our feedback back to Mr. Clark. Any other comments or questions? Okay, thanks very much, Andy. Thanks, Steve. Police Scotland. John.
If I may start, and then I'll pass to Aaron to go through the report. First and foremost, I'd just like to touch on a couple of items of significant change over the coming months. And I'm delighted to have Chief Inspector Jocelyn O'Connor with us today to speak on the contact assessment model. I'm not going to reiterate what Jocelyn's going to tell you, but what I would say is, from a divisional commander's perspective, I welcome and wait with great anticipation the introduction of the contact assessment model within the Lothian and Scottish borders. It will be in place by March of 2020, and ultimately it's a new way of dealing with demand through a Thrive assessment, which Jocelyn will go into what the details of that are, but makes a determination on attendance based on threat, harm, risk, vulnerability, etc. The work that's been undertaken in the west side of the country, primarily Lanarkshire, Greater Glasgow, Dumfries and Galloway, and CAM's been introduced elsewhere right across the west by January, it will reduce demand on the police. It just changes, I suppose, the way we deal with demand rather than reducing demand. And again, I will allow Jocelyn to go on to that point and open up for questions. But that will be one significant area of change in the coming months. Secondly, I just want to then touch on mobile working. Mobile working, I touched on at the last meeting. We have started the rollout of the mobile devices to officers within Midlothian and the wider division. That will be completed by the end of February. And as officers get their training and their devices, they will go in the streets with their new devices. In simple terms, the device that they have is a sort of large mobile phone looking item, but any check, anything that they can do in a police station, they can now do outside. So any person's checks, any statements, any crime reports, anything that can be undertaken from an administrative and bureaucratic perspective on a station can now be undertaken in the public domain. What does that mean? That ultimately means that visibility should increase within Midlothian. And I, as divisional commander, will be encouraging officers to ensure that when they leave the stations, they do not come back to the stations for the administrative functions that historically have been carried out, that actually they go to local CAFs, they go to schools, they go to youth groups, they go to places where they will be seen. And I anticipate the public will see an increased visibility of officers within Midlothian as a result of that investment. Looking forward to that, and actually when you speak to officers across Midlothian, actually I was speaking to one the other day there, and they did say to me that they don't need to come back to the station anymore once you leave at the start of their shift, because it does have all the functionality. So it's a positive contribution to policing, and it's one that I look forward to as well, and I'm sure you may have further questions on that as we move forward. Want to just touch on a couple of other points before I then give a slight overview from an operational perspective. As we move forward with the uncertainty around Brexit, the Force Reserve will stay in place. That ultimately means that there is resources centrally available for the Lothians and Scottish Borders to pull on. But be clear, the resources come from the division, so we supply into the Force Reserve. And ultimately, we are now asking for the Force Reserve to come back. So, for example, they are down in this area of the division dealing with a missing person at this moment in time. But that I anticipate that will go on past the 31st of January and onward, I would anticipate. And again, I will report back on the position of the Force Reserve at our next meeting. Potential victims of trafficking, clearly, the incident in Essex has raised the profile of human trafficking. Be clear, Midlothian is not exempt to issues of human trafficking, and there have been issues of young Vietnamese attending locations within Midlothian even over the last couple of weeks asking for assistance, and there has been a significant increase of potential victims of trafficking across Scotland, including the Lothian and Scottish borders and encompassing Midlothian as well. And again, once we develop some additional analysis on that, I will bring that back so that you're clear what the position is in Midlothian. But it is a live issue within the Midlothian area, as it is across Scotland. And finally, before I pass on to Aaron, two points. I'd reiterate the point that Steve says about the fireworks sort of activity. We called it Operation Torsion, and then there was Operation Moonbeam and so on. However, what I would say is that isn't a success of one night by the Scottish Fire Rescue Service, Police Scotland and the wider partners. I think Steve would reiterate or highlight that actually this is a year's worth of work with youth groups, with members of the community, with schools, and there's been a fantastic piece of work right across the board by the Scottish Fire Rescue Service, officers within Police Scotland and wider partners. And the experience that Scottish Fire and Rescue Service have had, we've had the same experience. Minimal calls, real positive feedback from community members, youth groups, schools, and hopefully that will continue as we go forward. But it has been a lot of hard work over the last 12 months, and I would support Stephen's position in relation to the legislative perspective. And I know Stephen said it's a personal position. Actually, my position is exactly the same. The introduction of legislation to control the sale of fireworks undoubtedly will make communities safer, and one that I look forward to hear how that progresses over the next 12 months. I'm going to pass to Aaron to outline the operational report. What I would say is, and I'm not going to steal Aaron's thunder here, however, some of the, I've highlighted before that violence will always be a priority within this division and this part of the division. Aaron's going to highlight some of the solvency rates around violence, which are some of the highest in Scotland. What I would say is violence still remains too high in Midlothian. And again, we will highlight some of the work that we're going to undertake in relation to this. Crimes of dishonesty have reduced significantly in Midlothian, and that's a result of some real hard and dedicated work Aaron and his team have done, not just in Midlothian, but understanding the criminal fraternity travelling into Midlothian from other areas of Scotland, not just Edinburgh, but other areas and the northeast of England. And finally, he will talk about Group 2 crimes, sexual crimes. You'll note that they have risen. I would suggest, as I've suggested to you before, that if I come to this table and ever say that crimes of a sexual nature have decreased in terms of reporting, I would suggest that's a failing on my part. Actually, it's an underreported crime. I anticipate sexual crimes under Group 2 will continue to rise in Midlothian because of the confidence of reporting. So it's actually the criminality is taking place, but actually whatever study you can read, some of them suggest it's actually 80% underreported to 50% underreported. So I anticipate that number to increase. But I will pass to Aaron, and then I think we'll pause for questions there, Steve, if that's okay with the chair, and then Joss can come in with Cam. Okay.
Okay, any questions or comments at the time? If I could just briefly, I skipped item 5.2.1. It's a letter from the SPA, it is in the agenda pack. It's with regard to the strategic policing priorities. There was a response to the consultation due by the 4th of October, and Alison kindly submitted that response. There's also a collaboration, SPA and Police Scotland. It's a joint team to review the extent of the strategy of policing in 2026. And again, our views are sought, and that response is required by the 22nd of November. And Alison's kindly going to draft a response to that as well. So any feedbacks or comments or input into that response can come to either myself, and I'll pass it on to Alison, or straight to Alison is probably preferable. Okay.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair. Good morning, councillors. This is my third scrutiny report, and as always, I'm delighted to be here. The figures I present for Midlothian today, as alluded to by the Chief Superintendent, are very positive. I'm going to put a bit of context around these as I go through the report. As always, I just must stress that the MCAT play a significant part in this, and without them, we wouldn't be in the position we are in today. So thank you for that continued support on them. I continue to be an advocate of robust policing when necessary, and I don't intend to deviate from that path either. I actively patrol with the teams, as I believe that you can't lead from the front when you're standing behind others. I'm out there experiencing what's going on, and this helps me understand the demand and the challenges that I need to focus on, both from a strategic point of view and a tactical point of view. Overall, we have seen a decrease in total crimes of 6.3% to 2,168 recorded in Q2. We continue to see a decrease in Q1. There was a 10.3% decrease with 1,082 crimes. The officers and staff continue to work well within Midlothian despite the high demand levels, and it's fair to say that mental health and missing people, namely children, are still at the forefront of demand. On a positive note, I'm happy to tell you that funding has been agreed from Police Scotland's partnership project budget, and £5,000 has been donated to the Bill Russell Woodburn Youth Project. And there is further funding going to be made available in the next couple of weeks to One Dalkeith, the Bike Shed, and Dalkeith Thistle Football Club, who all provide community facilities for youth activities and other ventures. If I can go on to the report now, start with tackling substance misuse. The crime figures that you can see there have increased compared to last year, with total detections from 26 rising to 32, an increase of 6, an 18% uplift, which is very positive. This is very much an intelligence-led policing activity, and it's paramount we continue to tackle drug supply, production and cultivation as this blights all our communities. The secret for me has been involved with our communities through CBOs, school link officers, not only from a preventative side, which is paramount, but also to basically find out what's going on. The MCAP also plays an extremely proactive role in this, targeting the right individuals through the intelligence-led policing. If I can go into missing persons now. Current state of this continues to be an area of concern for me. We had 498 missing people incidents reported to Midlothian in Q2 compared to 467 this time last year, which is an increase of 31 instances. Challenges we've got are there's still too many people absconding, children that being mainly under child supervision or doesn't look after children. What we're collectively going to do about it, obviously the pilot exercise, as I alluded to in Q1 at Woodburn YPU, started, and we've seen some good results as a result of that, which has been continued to be rolled out to other areas and units within the Midlothian area. Constant meetings with social work and health regarding the other children, meeting parents, education to reduce the amount of time officers spend on the necessary reporting of missing persons when they're not actually genuinely missing, when they're just actually out for 45 minutes and half an hour and haven't come back from their YPUs, etc. On a positive note, out of the 498 missing persons up to Q2, only one was recovered deceased, which was at the early start of Q1. If we can go into crimes of dishonesty, the current state with that is we continue to see a fall in this of 17.6% in crimes of dishonesty, falling from 1209 to 996 up to Q2 in respective years. 213 cumulatively fewer crimes, and the detection rate currently sits at 31.6, which is an improvement in Q1 from 31.2, but it's still down 7.7% on Q2 last year. On a positive note, there was no bogus collar crimes in Q1, and we've only recently had one at the tail end of August in Q2. Housebreakings overall are down 25.7%, with 47 fewer crimes compared to quarter two last year. Dwelling houses, there's 30 fewer reported, which is down 32.3%, but there's one more business housebreaking compared to last year. Motor vehicle crime has reduced by 26.2%. There's 43 fewer victims compared to the same time last year. Detection rate for Q1 was low at 15.3%, but this now sits at 21.5% for the end of Q2, and last week the figure now sits at 25.5%. That's for all motor vehicle crime. Again, this is small numbers, high percentages, and it's got the potential to fluctuate, but at least we're going in the right direction, and there's a considerable increase in Q1. The challenges, as always, travelling criminals committing house breakings in our area, that the Chief Superintendent's alluded to. Fraud is on the rise within the UK, and will continue to do so as technology advances, banking protocols are in place and prevention advice in place. Do we shout out scammers for bogus callers? Fraud in Midlothian has risen slightly, 72 this year compared to 65 the same time last year. This is well below the national average of fraud increases, as we're seeing around about a 38% increase in fraud nationally as technology advances. What we're collectively going to do about it? Police Scotland East meet daily under Operation Green Bay. This is to target this kind of activity, the travelling criminals who come over the border and come from Edinburgh, etc. And it's fair to say the majority of these criminals are still from the sort of dry law and Pilton areas. Crime prevention advice is given out by CBOs, but in this instance, prevention is the key, especially when leaving their keys beside the front door, etc. I alluded to keeping your keys in a microwave before, and I hope nobody's actually done that, but it is quite handy unless you take them out in the morning. Straight and Shopwatch continues to be a success and is well received by the retailers. The MCAT activity and more robust policing around shoplifting and antisocial behaviour resulting in arrests and bail conditions not to approach the retail park and surrounding shops. Obviously, I'm well aware that there's more units scheduled to be built there this year. I think it starts this year or start of next year, which will increase our capacity and demand. So the Straight and Shopwatch has proven extremely successful at the moment, but it should see no decrease in that when the new units come about. If I can go on to domestic abuse, the detection rate in Q1 was 73.6%. In Q2, we see that increasing to 79.4%. 637 reported incidents compared to 588 last year, an increase of 8.3%. Section 1 of the DASA, which is Coercive and Controlling Behaviour, which was introduced in Q1 this year, Midlothian has 7 recorded, of which 3 are currently solved and 4 are ongoing inquiries. And that is the lowest numbers in J Division we have. The challenges for that, Mr McKenzie said, it's still an underreported crime, but through engagement, social media and marketing campaigns, hopefully the confidence will increase and there will obviously see a rise in the reported crimes as we would. What we're doing about it, this is definitely an area where collectively we can make a difference, and it's not all down to Police Scotland. We've obviously got Midlothian, MATAC, sharing information, the Domestic Abuse Disclosure Scheme, the right to ask and the power to tell. Police Scotland domestic abuse training is still ongoing for police and support staff. That should be coming to a conclusion early in the new year. We've got the proactive bail checks, which are conducted by officers and predominantly the MCAT, and we obviously reach out to partners for additional support. If I can go into racially aggravated conduct, Q2 figures are 51 compared to 50 the same time last year. Detection rate at Q2 sits at 80.4%. Q2 last year was 82%, so we've seen a slight decrease in that. Hate crime is reviewed on a daily basis by my deputy LAC, Jim Morrison. The current detection rate for this now sits last week at 87.3%. The challenges we have and will continue to have going forward are some victims don't feel comfortable reporting the matter to the police. We're trying to overcome this by having third-party reporting centres in place so they don't need to come to the police all the time. Working in partnership now with these 16 areas in Midlothian for these crimes to be reported in person or via telephone, social media, and the national initiatives such as Keep Safe. And nationally, these centres, we've got over 400 in Police Scotland, which is quite good. Going on to sexual crime, Q2 recorded crime is 119 compared to 96 last year, which we see a 23.9% increase in these crimes. Q1 saw an increase of 17.6%. Rape has risen from 27 last year to 36 this year, 9 more victims. Sexual assault has risen by 2 instances, and lewd and libidinous practice has risen by 12. A lot of these can be attributable to a national investigation into a place within Midlothian by the National Child Abuse Unit, and I expect these incidents to fluctuate as old crimes are identified and dealt with. These are in the main very historic, some are dating back 30 and 40 years plus. The challenges, The increase can be attributable to the national campaigns and obviously awareness reasons, so victims have the confidence in reporting, as the Chief Super has alluded to earlier on. What are we collectively doing about it? Partnership working is critical in this crime type, and partner agencies play a pivotal role in offering support and guidance in respect of this. We've increased our numbers in our PPU departments in place to tackle older and the more complex crimes, and this continues to be a focus for us in Midlothian. Crimes of violence, Chief Super alluded to, this crime type is up 27 crimes. It's low volume, high percentages. There was 227 were in private space, 47.3%, and this includes common assaults. 253 were in public space. Our serious assaults are up 11 crimes. Our robbery is down one crime, and common assaults are up 30 crimes, which sees a 7.3% rise in the common assaults from the same time last year. It's obviously my commitment to continue a sustained focus on violence and violent crime, especially in and around the licensed premises. I think our weekend plans that are in place, there's incident licensed premises goes in for a lot of licensed premises over the weekend, so we're high visibility policing on a Friday and Saturday night will continue to be my focus. There's only 5 serious assaults linked to licensed premises in Midlothian in quarter two. Just under half of serious assaults with a weapon, and there's some recording guidance for serious assaults means that there must be some kind of mark or scar, and that's where the serious assaults are coming in with a weapon. Detection rates, group one sits at 78.5, 3% up to 22.7%. Serious assaults is 96.8%, now 96.9%. And robbery is 83.3%. So these are really, really good figures. And the detection rate for common assaults is currently 66.6%. Obviously, as I alluded to, these figures are good compared to the rest of the Lothian and Scottish borders, but obviously we won't rest on our laurels and there's more work to be done around that. The challenges we've got, that alcohol always plays a part. People will always fall out after nights out and fights do occur. That's just the nature of the youths that we're actually dealing with now at the moment. What we're collectively doing about it, Operation Paragios is a dedicated team to target violent crime and repeat offenders. As alluded to earlier on, we've got our weekend violence reduction plans, our ILP checks, our party house checks, and our places of interest to the police. Pub Watch has been reintroduced in Bonnerig, and the Best Bar None projects across Midlothian are seeing quite a significant benefit already. Tackling the night crime economy. I visited all the licensed premises and spoken to the licensees in there, and we have dispersals in place for police contact all Friday and Saturday nights. I keep alluding to Woodburn Miners. That's probably the busiest place in Lothian and Scottish borders for me, combined on a sort of quiet night. They can have 450, anything up to 825 on a busy night. In Q1, I've done an operation with our colleagues in specialist resources where a drug dog and plainclothes officers came in, and some of the results were quite startling with the drugs wipes and things like that for cocaine. I've done it again 6 weeks ago, and I'm pleased to say the results were far, far few than what we got in the first instance. We've got a good relationship with Woodburn Miners. It's obviously the busiest place in Midlothian, so we continue to do that sort of operation on a 6-weekly basis. I'm going to do that. But it's decreased considerably from the first time we've done it, which is quite a positive in my eyes. If I can go into road casualties now, there's been a dramatic drop in this, and again, prevention's the key. There's only one increase in the serious RTC, and the slight has reduced by 30 instances. There's no fatalities, and overall the road casualties have reduced by 38.4%. In July, there was 122 breath tests carried out in J Division, which is the second highest in the force. We've got our national campaigns, our drink drive campaigns, especially coming up to the festive period, and Operation Close Pass, which was carried out again in and around the Penicuik area. We've got new drugs wipes, which were introduced on the 21st of October, and they're receiving good feedback on their use. And I've got a lot of proactive work with the MCAT and our response teams with our colleagues in Roads Policing doing that. We've seen such really good feedback on these so far. It's early doors, but it's all positive. If I can go into our antisocial behaviour, this has increased by 2.1% from 2,068 to 2,112 at the end of Q2, an increase of 44 incidents, which is 20 up on Q1. Vandalism is up 11 crimes, and fire raising is down 8 crimes, which is a 33.3% reduction. Drunken disorderly crimes are down 11, which is a 63.3% reduction. Again, it's small numbers, high percentages. Violence reduction plans, our hotspots are identified on a Thursday and Friday for the weekend, and officers are tasked to deal with antisocial behaviour. Again, MCAT plays a significant part in this. MCAT are in place to help with the policing side for the local authority and support the local authority's community safety team as necessary. Mr. McKenzie alluded to Operation Torchon, which was our bonfire initiative. This proved really successful in Midlothian, only resulting in 18 calls over the piece, which was, there was two crimes came out of that 18 calls, one for Dalkeith for a reckless conduct and one for Gore Bridge for a fire raising. And I think, as our colleagues in the fire service, preventative work was key to this, and it's obviously borne fruit with the resulting calls and only two crimes that we've had. Our Christmas initiative, I wasn't responsible for this name, Operation Frankincense. It's probably one of the better ones that we get nowadays. The plans are in for this, and this will see activity commence on Friday the 6th of December, moving to the 3rd of January 2020. There's reduced the fear of crime, increased police presence in relevant areas to deter criminal element and provide public reassurance, prevent disorder in public places, address and deal with issues and concerns raised with members of the public and retail outlets, detect and report offences, and progress any intelligence regarding shoplifting and associated offending. So that's our KPIs for that, which will start on the 6th of December. For going to our counter-terrorism, this is just basically an awareness. Never rest on our laurels for this, although the threat level has reduced. We have Midlothian Counter-Terrorism Liaison Officer, who does some sterling work in this area. She links in with schools, and the hub officers do their piece in that as well. Lastly, if I can go on to the MCAT, the figures that they have produced in my eyes are quite outstanding, and I'd like to thank you again for your continued commitment to this. And to be honest, if we didn't have this, it would be a completely different picture for Midlothian. They attended 911 incidents and dealt with, ranging from their six KPIs you can see there, which is up from Q1. They attended 836 incidents. That's all I've got. I appreciate for listening to me, and I'm happy to take any questions if you may have.
Thanks, Aaron. Those are really positive initiatives you highlighted at Woodburn Club, and that are bearing results as well. And good to hear there's good working relationship there with the club management as well. Any questions or comments? Councillor McCall.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, I can't remember what page it was on, Aaron, but I'm intrigued about the architectural liaison and to make new buildings more crime preventative. I just wondered if I could hear a wee bit more about that, please.
Yeah, we've got Ian Kilpatrick on that. He's just changed roles, so that's more positive sort of slant for us to get him involved in that at an early stage. He's just taken up the role about 3 weeks ago, so it's still early doors for us, but we just need to tie in with him and get him to as many meetings as possible for that.
Could I just add, if I may, I suppose it's one component of a wider strategic approach to try and reduce crime, that the sort of architectural liaison sort of work. And I suppose that's the point I would like to reiterate. There will always be a focus, the strategic aim to reduce crime in Midlothian. But when crime is committed, then actually the team will pursue people with vigour, and that's as a result of why you have an excess of 96% solvency for serious assaults, as an example. And if people commit crime and then they're pursued and it's detected, if they have bail conditions, they will be policed vigorously, so actually people understand that there is a consequence for actions, and in addition, that there is a civic responsibility by other members in the public. For example, Woodburn Miners, they've worked really well with Arran to introduce additional CCTV, to introduce a dispersal time, and actually the number of violent incidents in the Woodburn Miners have reduced significantly over this quarter, but that's the expectation across Midlothian, that actually that civic responsibility will be the norm and not an exception, certainly. But actually, the architectural liaison officer is one component of a wider strategy to reduce crime in Midlothian, with the caveat that anybody that does commit crime in their priorities will be pursued with vigour.
Councillor Muirhead.
Aye. When I was reading this report, when we on the CAT team, part of the second last page there, when we're talking about bail curfew checks, we're looking at 94% are actually compliant. What occurred to me when I was looking at that was it may be quite interesting to actually look back right to when we started the CAT teams, when we were first going out and doing the compliance checks, what the level of compliance actually was at that time, because the point you're making about people have to understand there are consequences, the chances of getting caught when you're breaking your bail conditions now are greater because of the number of checks that are being carried out. What was it actually like when we started this? It would just be an interesting thing to be able to go back and look at.
Yeah, we'll take that action away and we'll come back with some figures. And I think that the point that you make is accurate, and I'm sure will support this position. Individuals within Midlothian and the wider Lothians and Scottish Borders area, they speak to each other and they clearly understand that if you're on bail, they're going to get a knock on the door. If they've got a bail curfew, they're going to get a knock on the door. And that's the point that actually they have to expect that, well, they have to accept there's consequences, and actually not only will we pursue them for the detection of the crime, but bail conditions, etc., to safeguard wider members of the public. But we'll come back with those figures.
Councillor Smale.
Thank you. There's one kind of specific question and then a more general issue which has been around for a while. Specifically, I mean, buried within these, there may be instances where knives have been pulled by young people on shop owners. This sort of incident that we've seen a plague of in down south of the border. And we just wonder if we've had recently much more experience of this. I'm partly thinking of a specific incident, but it may be a general trend that we should be worried about. The general question is one we touched on before. With the abolition of the community justice teams, it's more difficult for councillors to know what to do when there are bitter neighbour disputes. Obviously, we don't want to escalate them to the police unless absolutely necessary, but it's not very clear to me as a councillor at what stage it ceases to be a matter for the housing officers or for our social work teams, and starts to be a question of intimidation, where it would be proper for councillors to be directly in touch with the police in order to achieve some sort of resolution.
Well, let me take the first part of your question, and in relation to neighbours' disputes, the arrangements locally, I'll pass to Arran to highlight that. So I'm not going to make any comment about an incident you've alluded to, other than to say that subject to investigation, there's lines of inquiry, and actually that will be reported in the normal manner. So the question, the more substantive point you raise is, has knife crime increased? Do we have the same challenges that we have or our colleagues experience in large metropolitan areas in England and Wales? My position to that is no. The last report, I don't know if you recall, under crimes of violence, we actually provided the aggravator, so you could actually see how many were linked to alcohol, how many were linked to weapons. It wasn't included in this occasion simply because that the we've been informed that actually the numbers are for management purposes, and actually that there's some reliability issues in relation to the recording. So actually we're looking into that so we can provide. But in terms of knife crime in the manner that you've sort of highlighted, we do not have the level of knife-related crime. Now, there are knife-related issues within the private and public environment, private settings with regards to kitchen knives, etc. And within there have been a number of instances with knives within the public sector as well, public environment, but there's certainly not been the increases that our colleagues have experienced in England and Wales. And had there been, there would have been a number of actions that I would still take, and that would include inviting the Violence Reduction Unit into Midlothian to have a wider discussion about wider partnership and violence reduction opportunities. But that's not the position of Midlothian. I hope through the activity that Aaron has pursued, we had a bad quarter one with violent crime, as you will recall. Quarter two has slowed down somewhat. My hope is we will see a reduction of violent crime in real terms when you strip out the Domestic Abuse Scotland Act legislative crimes that weren't measured in the previous years. And in addition to this report, I hope at the next time we speak, we will give you five-year averages as well so that you can understand the five-year pattern. So in terms of the neighbourhood disputes, I'll pass that to Aaron if I may.
Our community teams and our MCAT are picking up the neighbour disputes before they escalate. There's seen an increase in calls. I don't know what sort of percentage we're talking about at the moment, but there's definitely been an increase in calls which are having to be dealt with by us because there just is no deals.
Yeah, it leads still to the question of, as councillors, should we be perhaps more better trained to know when to refer directly to you and the police force as distinct from the resources of the council?
Yeah. Let's take that one off table to make a determination of what advice, information, training you've had previously, and then we can provide some guidance. And in relation to MCAT picking up the neighbour dispute activity, this was a point that was raised at the last meeting, the difference between social housing, private housing, and actually there's an acceptance actually that with the investment in the MCAT and the wider financial restraints within Midlothian County, actually, there's a pragmatic position here that MCAT will take up some of that activity within the private housing sector. But again, we'll come back to you with regards to some additional guidance we can give local elected members.
I was just going to say, in the meantime, if you're unsure about where to come, you can just continue to come to us. As we say, it's council housing will tend to be through our housing colleagues. If it's a private let or it's a owner-occupier, that's when we would generally refer onto the police. But if you're unsure about that and where someone sits, if you come to us, we can offer that advice until there's something more clear that comes out.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments or questions? I'll just pick up on Jim's point on the bail conditions. I think they're vitally important, and it's encouraging to see that we're doing so many checks. We're able to do so many checks. If you stay in Midlothian and you're subject to bail conditions, you know that you're going to get at least one knock at the door per shift, usually per day, which is encouraging also for some level of reassurance for victims of crime as well. So it's good to see these stats. So if there's no more comments or questions, that's today's meeting concluded. Sorry. Jocelyn, hiding in the corner there. I was just about to wish everybody a Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. Jocelyn, apologies.
So I'm just going to talk to you a little bit about the contact assessment model that's going to be introduced to Lothian Scottish Borders Division at the end of March, at the same time as it's going to be introduced into Edinburgh next year. The contact assessment model basically is a new way that Police Scotland are going to assess calls that are made either through the 999 system, the 101 number, or by people attending at police stations throughout the division. What I'm going to do is we needed to do it. HMIC told us, as did various PERC reports, that we needed a more robust threat assessment model to look at calls when they came in particular with a focus on vulnerability. At the moment, about of the 3.5 million calls a year to Police Scotland, only about 20% of them end up with a crime being reported, and we're seeing a greater number that are involving vulnerabilities. So the contact assessment model is about making sure we don't just have a standardised approach to calls of a certain type, that we look at the needs of the caller, the specific circumstances, and then we give them the right response. So what I'm going to do first of all is to show you a quick video. The commander said, we've already got this in Lanarkshire, Dumfries and Galloway, and it rolled out to Greater Glasgow a few weeks ago, and it's already we're already seeing some significant improvements. I think myself, having been a Lothian and Scottish Borders officer for 13 years until about a couple of months ago, and also having been in Dalkeith for the last 4 years or so, and knowing the demands on Mid Lothian, I do think this will be a significant improvement in the way that the police deliver to the front, to your public here. So I'm going to just go over a short PowerPoint to tell you a little bit more about CAM. You can find it on here. And apologies to those that have seen this presentation before. So why CAM? We recognise the requirement to better assess risk and vulnerability at first point of contact. And we acknowledge the limitations in our current operating model. Oops, go back in. I'm having technical problems. We acknowledge the limitations in our current operating model and seek to improve the service we offer. I mean, basically what we're finding out with our calls at the moment is that about 15% of calls that are made by members of the public, we're failing at first point of contact. So when people are phoning in, we're telling them, the controllers are telling them that they're going to get a response within 4 hours, knowing full well they're not going to get a response, but that's just what the current process means that we have to do. And thereafter, we find that our officers going to the non-urgent calls are quite often having, as soon as they go through the door, they're having to apologise for being late, for not coming. So the CAM should take out that 15% failure rate. So we want to implement a model which enables the most appropriate and proportionate policing demand response. As said in the film, what won't change our response to urgent and critical incidents, our focus on protecting the public and the most vulnerable in our communities, and our officers' ability to engage and be visible in the community. And by reducing demand, we'd expect that officers will have more opportunity to be proactive and be involved in such things as the bail curfew checks or the weekend policing plans around Woodburn Miners and the other licensing premises in Midlothian. So what will change? Removal of default call grading, empowering staff to make decisions based on facts and circumstances. At the moment, certain calls will always get a certain response, depending if it's a hate crime, a domestic, and that might not always suit the individual caller. So response is going to be based on a Thrive assessment. So this will be 101 calls, 999 calls, and people attending public counters at the stations, because the station assistants are getting trained in this as well. So the assessment's based around threat, harm, risk, investigation opportunities. If we recognise that actually it might not be a serious instance that's ongoing, but however, if there's investigative opportunities, if there's witnesses nearby, if a crime's just been committed, then we need to prioritise that and get our officers to it. Vulnerability, a major factor now. I mean, a majority of officer time is spent dealing with those that are more vulnerable in our communities. And engagement. So when you phone up the police, we will tell you what our response will be, and more importantly, we will tell you when we'll be coming to see you, whether it be an immediate priority or by a diary call, or indeed by resolving the issue over the phone. So this is how we could respond. Immediate attendance at the scene. At the moment, we respond priority calls. About 4% of our calls get an immediate response. This is looking to rise to 17%. So you're going to see a lot more people going to get, when they phone in with a crime in progress or they're vulnerable or they need help, they're going to get a quick response. Thereafter, following the immediate response, we'll have a prompt attendance within 4 hours. This is where we're failing at the moment. We're telling people we're going to get there within 4 hours and we're not. The findings so far have been in Glasgow, Lanarkshire and Dumfries and Galloway that we've been able to meet these attendance figures that we've actually been dispatching and getting to these calls. We have been making those calls on time. Skipping it. Scheduled attendance. So basically this is diaries, local policing appointments. So this is going to become the Police Scotland standard response. So about 10% of calls that are phoned in to the service centre will be dealt with by offering that individual a diary appointment, and that diary appointment will be within the next few days, and that could be either attending at that person's house, attending at a place they want to meet, could be their place of work, or by them attending at a police station. And that means they're going to get the police when we say they're going to go there. And non-attendance, I think this will be the biggest change we'll see. The resolution team, which will be a team of specially trained officers sitting in the control room at Bilston at the ACR, they will provide advice and guidance, take crime reports over the phone and do remote investigations, such as investigation if the CCTV opportunities, they can basically phone up to see, check the CCTV, get it put aside. What we find at the moment is quite a lot of the time people will phone the service centre and they want to speak to a police officer. The service centre aren't able to do that at the moment, and that's when we tell people, yes, we'll come and see you, we'll see you within 4 hours, and we don't get there. But the resolution team is trained police officers and they will be able to give those advice calls. So if it's about neighbour disputes and there's not actually harm ongoing, there's not a threat or risk, if there's things that we can be resolved over the phone by giving advice, then that's what the resolution team will do, and that will free up the time of the divisional teams, Aaron's team, to go out where they're needed and to the more priority calls. And likewise, taking reports of crime over the phone. We already take reports of crime over the phone, we'll be taking more reports of crime over the phone. They'll still be investigated, they'll still be managed in the division, but initial reports can be taken over the phone. So I suppose really examples of how Thrival works. So at the moment, if you phone 999 after having a domestic row or an argument with your partner who's left the house, we give that a grade 2 response, which means we dispatch an officer within 15 minutes. And that's a default position. Even though the person's left, they may no longer be a risk. Under the proposed model, we'll do a Thrive assessment, we'll carry out enhanced checks, and then the response will be dependent on the circumstances. It might mean if that person's vulnerable, we'll dispatch a set. If they're safe, we might arrange an appointment to go and see them the next day, etc. The second one is a hate crime. So if you phone to make a call about a racist incident, for example, that's happened early in the day, our default response, again, is dispatch officers within 15 minutes. Sometimes we find, particularly sometimes when it's racist calls within premises, business premises, your corner shops, actually that person does want to see the police, but actually that's a busy time in their shop and they don't really have the time to go and take CCTV for you and get a statement, so we can arrange a diary appointment and see them when they want to be seen. So what we've seen so far in the sort of first 9 weeks when it ran in sort of Dumfries and Galloway and Lanarkshire in terms of demands, probably a bit higher demand than Lothian and Scottish Borders, so quite a busy division. 36,000 incidents were received. Around 20% of those were dispatched within 5 minutes, and that's as opposed to what you've got at the moment is about 4 or 5% of calls that are dispatched within 5 minutes. Over 95% compliance rate with diary appointments. That means when the police made diary appointments, they weren't missing them saying, sorry, we've got to go to something else, we've got a priority call, we're not going to go to your diary. They were actually going to the diaries. 15% of call demand was managed within the new resolution team. We'll see that rise over time as people get more confident, but that's calls that initially would have had officers dispatched to go and give advice or take a crime report, and that's been dealt with over the phone. And we've seen, as from the video, of positive feedback from officers and staff, and we're obviously ongoing. We review all the time to make sure that the Thrive assessment model is working. So the attendance, really, for police officers, there was a 12% drop in concern for person calls, 14% reduction in noise complaints, getting dispatched to noise complaints, 27% reduction getting dispatched to vehicle-related crime, 63% to other calls that were getting dealt with by the resolution team, 17% less dispatched to abandoned vehicles, and 13% less dispatched to assist members of the public. So these were all getting dealt with by the resolution team. What I'm going to do is I'm just going to show you a quick animation of what the Thrive model is, and then I'll be happy to take any questions. So that's a quick sort of brief overview of what CAM is and how it is intended to deliver into the Lothian Scottish Borders Division. As I say, at the moment, it's anticipated that that will be at the end of March 2020. And I'm obviously working closely with my colleagues in J Division to make sure that the division's ready. It will not go live unless the commander and also the ACC Hawkins is happy that all the measures are in place. What I'll be doing as part of the sort of planning is making sure that there's plenty of engagement with partners as we move into the new year after the busy sort of festive period's over. But we've already started planning in terms of what impact that's going to make on Lothian Scottish Borders. But I am very positive, as is the commander, that I think this will make a significant difference in improving the availability of the local policing teams to make a real difference, to get to the priority calls, to take longer in time dealing with vulnerable people, taking longer in investigating crimes, and be more proactive in their community, especially when they've got the mobile data as well. So I see it as a really positive move for the public and businesses in Midlothian. But I'm happy to take your questions now.
Thanks very much, Jocelyn. I've got a couple of questions. I think with regards to the 20%, I think one of the statistics was 20% of the 36,000 calls officers would dispatch within 5 minutes. I think probably it would have been, I didn't mean to be negative here, but probably the more important statistic there would have been the arrival time as opposed to the dispatch time.
I think I suppose it's difficult to sort of say, because obviously the areas are covered involve urban and rural, but when we've looked at it, actually, in terms of the reviewing the calls, there have not been any incidents of sort of near misses. So we've gone to more calls and been treated as priority than they were before. So it's not just that we're suddenly saying we're going to more priority calls. Things that we would have probably responded to within an hour or within a day, now because of the nature of what the call is, the vulnerability of the particular caller, we are dispatching quicker. But there will be continuing reviews as there will in call handling times to make sure that we're getting that right. And we're doing some analysis, the team at the moment, to see what the sort of difference CAM will make to J Division, to the calls there, and we'll be handing that to the command team so they can have a look and see how that's going to impact locally, because clearly there's a different sort of geography, different sort of populations throughout the Lothian and Scottish Borders area.
Thanks for that. And do officers have the technology just now to do remote PNC checks and sort of that checks of that nature?
Not at the moment. Obviously, the mobile devices that they'll be getting that the commander spoke of, these checks will become available through that. At the moment, it's shouting up over the radio. However, what part of CAM is that when the person phones into the service centre, so when they first point of contact, as soon as the phone's picked up, that the service staff will have more access to computers so they can check the vulnerable person's database at first point of contact to sort of identify vulnerabilities, and previously they haven't had that. So if someone's phoning, they can straight away see if there is a history of domestic abuse, if there's a history of mental health or other vulnerabilities. So that's the service centre will do that, but certainly the mobile data that will roll that out to officers over forthcoming months.
Thanks very much. Yes, sure.
The mobile data that I've referenced earlier on will allow, so that will be completed by the end of February. That will allow the remote checks to be undertaken by officers on the street. That was one of the reasons why we were clearly wanting to push the mobile data project into J Division at the earliest opportunity, and we took an opportunity to sort of move forward in the queue at one point, should I say, but by the end of February. So officers who have had their training last week, this week, and as we move forward, they will all have access, and then that will just move forward until the end of February. All response and community-based officers will have that technology and that facility online when they're on the street.
Thank you. Any comments or questions? Councillor McCall.
Thank you, Chair. Hi, Jocelyn. It's really nice to see you here. I wondered if in the pilots, you might not know this information, but if people have hung up because of the time it's been taken for the calls to get through, has there been a change there? So if we're managing to get through more calls and assess them in the correct way, does that mean that the time being taken has improved? Again, like I said, I'm sorry, that this might not be a question you're able to answer offhand.
So part of the CAM model has been a very assurance around the sort of call handling to make sure that, because we anticipated that as we're obviously asking more questions, that calls would take slightly longer to answer. But what we've seen so far is no dip. You know, so we're not seeing people having to wait longer, and clearly as it goes forward we'll make sure that we've got enough resources in place. I mean, our service centres are virtualised, so you can, it doesn't matter where you phone in, you could, your call will be getting answered somewhere throughout Scotland. So yes, we anticipate the calls will take slightly longer as more questions are asked, but in terms of the numbers, we've, at the moment we're satisfied that we've got enough people there that people aren't having to wait longer, so people aren't hanging up, getting fed up waiting for their call to be answered.
Give them your head.
A lot of this is about managing expectations by the public about how things are going to be progressed, because we've probably all been in situations where we've been sitting in somebody's house and trying to explain to them why the police wouldn't attend for a certain thing that they've got an expectation that they would. Most people's, you know, irrespective of what you do to try and publicise how things are going to happen, most people will not pay attention to that, and their experience will be when they have to make a call. Is there, you know, in the pilots that have taken place up to now, has there been a sort of increase in the time taken because, you know, you've had to explain to them that they're not going to get a response? Because, you know, there are some people who are not going to get a police officer attending, as you've indicated here. Is that taken up a bit of the, you know, what's going to be the public reaction to this when it's actually been put in practice?
I think generally so far, it's quite early days, obviously, and we have had HMIC in to have a wee look to see how things are going, and I think we probably will do a sort of public survey at some point in the future to sort of try and gather that. But I think what we've found is that actually in a wider majority of cases that police, that people are getting a quicker response from the police, but the part of the engagement is that people are told initially what the response will be. Be it, you know, they can be passed straight over to the resolution team for some advice. They can also get a diary appointment with the resolution team to give them some advice. So I think, yes, it's a sort of change. There will be a sort of culture change for members of the public. I mean, that's an ongoing battle for us, for them not to phone us to ask what the weather's going to be like tomorrow or whatever it is. However, I think, you know, we do have a marketing campaign, and we'll certainly, as it comes into Lothian and Scottish Borders, we'll be looking to look at the local papers, etc., and we're feeding into community council meetings, etc., to try and get that over. But I think generally part of the issue where we have failed is that we've been giving people unrealistic expectations by saying, yes, we'll be here within 4 hours, knowing full well we won't, whereas we can say, yes, understand you would like a police officer to come and see, however, we've assessed your call and what we're going to do is give you some advice over the phone. And yes, we will fully anticipate that actually some people might not be totally satisfied with that. However, we do have to balance our sort of demands. And we also understand that actually there'll be certain circumstances where the vulnerability involves, that means we'll still be sending police officers. So if you've got an elderly resident in the house who's wanting to report theft of washing, for example, but she's really felt really quite upset and vulnerable because someone's been in her garden, we're still going to go to that call. So, you know, we're looking at each individual call and dealing with it appropriately, so it's not a standard response. So yes, some people won't get the police anymore, but if there's vulnerabilities there, we will make sure that, you know, that they're getting an appropriate response.
As divisional commander for the Lothians and Scottish Borders, have the responsibility for ensuring that there is a policing response, an appropriate policing response that meets the needs of the community of Mid Lothian, and that will always continue to be the case. And that's why it's important, as Joss has highlighted, that I'm satisfied that the response that's been proposed falls in line with my expectations. I am, based on the feedback that I've had from Greater Glasgow, Lanarkshire, Dumfries and Galloway, and the results that have been born from those pilot areas, I am really satisfied. The HMICS review of the work undertaken, whereby 95%, over 95% of diary calls are being met. Actually, that far exceeds what's happening just now. And I suppose it's going back to your point, the public expectation. Police will attend when it's appropriate for police to attend. that's going to be there's going to be a slight difference there. So, and I go back to the point that you raised about or neighbours disputes within council tenancies. Actually, we would normally attend these, or we may attend these, but ultimately the end result might be that we sign post them back into the council. So actually what's going to happen under these circumstances is that you would anticipate a Thrive assessment would be undertaken. If there's vulnerabilities to the caller, police will still go. However, based on that Thrive assessment, actually the individual might just get signposted to a partner agency, whether it's local authority, whether it's health. I mean, some of the calls that we receive, police and the Scottish and Fire Rescue Service, if you were to read them, you do question, how does somebody get to the conclusion to ring the police about a certain matter? The police service in Scotland has been the agency that never says no, and to an extent the Scottish and Fire Rescue Service have been a victim of that, you know, that sort of civic responsibility. There's certainly going to be a difference, but the feedback has been really positive. The sort of view of the public over the coming months will be interesting to see. I anticipate that will be positive, because what you'll have is you'll have people who need the police immediately will get the police immediately. But if they need them in 4 hours, they'll get them in 4 hours, over 95%. Unlike the situation just now, whereby that's not achieved. And then in addition, what you should expect is that police officers will be in the communities when they need to be in the communities. And from my or Aaron's point of view, actually cops in West Lothian, Mid Lothian, West Lothian, the Scottish Borders and East Lothian might even get a peace break now and again, which doesn't happen as a matter of course. So the welfare issue is really important as well as that. Anyway, sorry I interjected, Jocelyn.
Any other comments or questions? Okay, final question from me, Jocelyn. The resolution team, how big are the teams? How many officers are on them? And are they aligned to each shift?
So the resolution team that will be set up at the ACR at Bilston will cover Edinburgh, Lothians and Borders, Fife and Central. That will be 72 police officers in total, 16 of which are already existing ACR staff in the pad, and the rest will come from the divisions as part of the recruitment. It's 24/7, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. And as I say, they're all getting additional training so that they can all do. So the insurance process is in. So if you phone up the pub, so if someone phones up the service centre, the initial call will be thrived. When it goes to the, if it decide they decide it needs a police resource, it'll go to the dispatcher, it'll get thrived again. Or if it goes to the resolution team, it'll be thrived as well. So we've got that in place as well to make sure that actually if the initial threat assessment isn't the best, or it's getting checked again. So, but yeah, that's the number of officers that will be staffing the resolution team.
So everybody's absolutely clear what Joss has said there. There isn't a cupboard full of police officers hiding that's going to resource the resolution team. It's right that if I'm seeing a reduction in demand in my area, that I make a contribution to that resolution team. the numbers fluctuate, and actually, I anticipate that you may be talking about between 14 and 16 resources from the Lothians and Scottish Borders as a whole as our contribution to this resolution team. Be clear, as a commander, if I'm given 14 to 16 resources, my expectation is that the targets that the CAM team have highlighted will be the targets that will be expected from ourselves. However, even when you do the calculation with that amount of resource, with that amount of reduction in demand, actually it makes far more sense to contribute than not, as the case may be. And we can come back where those come from. There's still ongoing discussions within the division. There's a train of thought that actually the response policing will see the reduction in demand, so actually the response policing should burden the loss. I think that calculation is too simplistic for a variety of reasons, but I'll come back or feedback through the correspondence to elected members just to highlight where those numbers are coming from and what impact, if any, from Mid Lothian. And I say if any, because the decision is not made.
Thanks, John. I think that would be helpful. Any other comments or questions? Can I just finish by saying I think that I'm sure we all agree that the staff in our control rooms, officers and police staff, continue to do a fantastic job, both police and in the fire control rooms, often under great pressure during peak demand periods. So on behalf of the board, I'm sure we can thank, pass our thanks on to everyone involved at ACR with this as well. So thank you, and that concludes today's meeting. Now I can say have a nice Christmas, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. And we'll meet again on the 17th of February. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.